I will go with the old man bounce back in Jason Wirth. I think he's not nearly as bad as he showed last year, and I think people are forgetting that he has a pretty good track record, and God willing, he'll be good enough that someone can start sending out links again to that Tumblr page of things of Jason Wirth jumping onto things, which is like it's still one of my favorite websites I've ever seen.
Us November and the waning sun, and all the proofs I'd like to prove, we go down tonight.
Good evening and welcome to episode 79 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I am your host, Brett Sayer, and with me as always is Mike Janella and George Bissell. How are you guys doing? It's Tuesday night. We don't usually record on a Tuesday. This is special.
This is special, and I feel special to be with you.
It's special, like seeing Pablo Sandoval and Hanley Ramirez at spring training. Special.
That's pretty special.
They're two of a kind. I'll give them that much.
This is true. You could say they might be three of a kind.
I know.
They kind of deserve it, though.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
I don't feel too bad.
I feel moderately bad.
I feel a little bad, but just a little.
Yeah. So we have a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. So we'll fast forward through the banter a little bit. Rather than going and looking at 2015 previous valuations, we are going to go straight to 2016 because we are talking about outfielders, and there's just about a billion of them. So we will kick this off right. You can read us at baseballperspectus.com. You can follow us on Twitter. I am at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. That's GIANELLA. And George is at George is at George Bissell. That's two S's and two L's. You can email us at flagsflyforever@baseballperspectus.com. Rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher. And that's where we're at. We'll take a quick break. We will jump into outfielders in 20 seconds. And we're back. So outfield. Let's start by talking about sort of general philosophy on the position this year. But Mike, does outfield feel any deeper or shallower to you this year than it did last year?
It's always about the same to me. There's a couple more players that come in, or there's first base outfield, which we categorize as outfielders at Baseball Prospectus. But it's always a very deep position. And I believe when I did the state of position last week and looked at how the values broke down, it's still about 40% of your 15-team mixed league. And I think that went up or down by a percentage point or two in terms of what those guys earn. So no, not much really changed. The one thing I'll say is the prospects that are immediately on the horizon. You've got Byron Buxton as the only certainty or near certainty. So that might be a little bit thinner than in years past in terms of the immediate pipeline, but outfield is always a very rich position.
Yeah, it generally is. It doesn't, to me, it doesn't feel any less rich this year, even though you do start to notice it a little bit once you get to your outfield fours and outfield fives. George, any greater strategic position you're taking on outfield this year, or just kind of let it come to you?
Well, I think there's a little bit of letting it come to you. I mean, we talked about it last week with the labor draft, but there's sort of this nice crop of outfielders right now where there's about, let's see, 15 going between the second and fourth round. So ideally, if you're looking at, if you're in a 15-team league, you want to try and get at least maybe one or two of those guys. And there's some great foundational pieces there. And if you just look at sort of the second and third round guys alone, you're getting five category production across the board. Guys like Pollock, Betts, Springer. Then a little bit further down, you got elite power. You know, J.D. Martinez, Yoenis Cespedes, Nelson Cruz, Justin Upton, Lorenzo Cain, Carlos Gomez, guys who can kind of do it all. So there's a lot of intriguing names. I think in that second to fourth or fifth round range, where you're going to be able to get at least two of those guys and set yourself up pretty good in the outfield. I feel comfortable going there because, like you talked about, there are no sure things once you really get beyond that range, and I don't like taking huge risks in the outfield. I like to shore up my production early.
Yeah. So speaking of shoring up your production early, let's talk about the five star tier here in the outfield. We know the top two names here. They we know, surprise to anybody. And Mike, these are the tiers that our colleague JP Breen put together at BP last week. So, you know, we talked a little bit about this at Labor. You know, at Trout and Harper are pretty much universal top three picks overall this year. I think everyone knows more or less what to expect with Trout. How confident are you that Bryce Harper has turned the corner and is this guy going forward?
Well, I'm mostly confident in that he has so much raw ability and is just such a terrific player. And it was mostly a question of injuries. The one slight caution with Harper, and I want to emphasize this is slight, you know, in the first half, his numbers were kind of so out of whack with what he's ever done before. And the second half was still excellent. But if you look at his TAV or however you want to break it down, you split them up. He was just really, really good as opposed to super excellent, you know, out of this realm, like, you know, above humanity, God-like player. So I have a little bit of caution. Like I could see Harper being only an end of the first round player in terms of earnings as opposed to a beginning of the first round player. But given the uncertainty that's locked into every player, you know, there is in a draft, I'm fine with taking him here. He might not run. I know they're saying he's going to run more, and Dusty Baker saying he'll let him run. But given the injury concerns, I don't see him stealing more than 10 to 15 anyway. You know, we're really talking about minor quibbles here. We're talking about Bryce Harper, who I believe you can take second or third and overall in a draft with confidence.
Yeah, so that leaves the rest of the guys in this tier, and you know, when we were talking about our Labor team last week, we talked about Andrew McCutchen being our you know, the guy that we valued as the third outfielder off the board this year. George, how close do you think Andrew McCutchen and Giancarlo Stanton are to each other in drafts, and are they both no question first round picks?
I think McCutchen is. I'd be a little skeptical on Stan. Obviously, we know what the ceiling is there, right? He stays healthy for 650 plate appearances. He's likely to challenge 45 to 50 home runs. No one's disputing that. Problem is, he just hasn't done that. So at a certain point, it becomes a risk if you're going to invest in a first-round pick on him. So look, you spend 5 minutes looking at the StatCast exit velocity data, and you can convince yourself that Stanton's the best hitter in the league. I mean, it's there. The evidence is there. But until he really puts it all together, it's hard to justify taking him in the first round, because if he gets hurt, you're losing so much production that it's hard to replace that kind of guy. McCutchen, he was hurt last year, but the difference was he really played through it, and we saw what he did. He got off to that slow start, but from the middle of May on, he hit over 300, 19 home runs, 9 stolen bases. I mean, this is a guy who the last 4 or 5 years has consistently earned right around first-round value. I like to get, you know, money in the bank's the old saying, but I'd feel much more confident in Andrew McCutchen returning first-round value than I would Giancarlo Stanton, and that's actually not the way they've been getting drafted so far. Stanton's actually going ahead of McCutchen, who's right on the edge of the first round. So I'm a little surprised by that, and I'd rather have McCutchen.
Yeah, So would I. I mean, the question is, right? I mean, you said if Stanton gets hurt, is the question if Stanton gets hurt, or is the question when Stanton gets hurt? Because Stanton has played more. He's played 125 games in one of the last 4 years.
Well, they're weird injuries, though. It's not like he pulled a hamstring or strained a quad and he missed a month. I mean, he got hit in the face with a baseball. Yep. And last year he broke a bone getting hit by a pitch. So the hamate bone. And that's hard to predict those types of injuries. I mean, AJ Pollock broke his hand in 2014 and he came back last year and played a full season. Obviously different guys. It seems like bigger guys are a little more susceptible to injury. Don't know why. It's just historically that's kind of been the case in virtually any sport. So I'd be a little concerned with Stanton. He could stay healthy, but I'm not willing to gamble a first-round pick on that until I see it. I just am not.
All right. So, Mike, where are you at on the final member of this five-star tier here? That's AJ Pollock. Is there, in your mind, is there enough of a separation between Pollock and the handful of names after him, guys like Starling Marte, Mookie Betts, etc. Is there enough separation for him to latch on into this five-star tier for you?
Oh, definitely. And you know, the great thing about the series and the PFM is it kind of backs up what my valuations say. And if you look at what Pollock earned in any format, even if he slips a little bit or somewhat, he's still a five-star guy. You mentioned Marte and Betts. I think Marte in particular, because of the steals, does have some, and the power combination does have some growth potential to perhaps catch up to Pollock. But you know, all that being said, Pollock was just so good last year and really came through. You know, in an AL or NL only, according to the PFM, he earned $46 if you round up. You know, that's amazing. I have him a little bit lower, but he was still a $40 plus player. So yeah, he's legitimate and I think he belongs here.
I agree with you. You know, Pollock is someone who I think it seems like there's still a little bit of skepticism around him, but there really shouldn't be. He is an extreme five category contributor, and you know, I think should he be a first rounder this year?
I would say late first round, yes, he belongs there.
Okay, that makes sense to me. So moving down to the four star tier, there's a lot here to digest. So what I think we should do is kind of go around and talk about some players in this tier and sort of where they sit, what our expectations are for them for this year. So Mike, who's someone that jumps out to you that you would like to discuss?
I think, well, you know, you mentioned him before, and it's kind of a cop out because, you know, he's sort of boring in terms of fantasy. But Mookie Betts. Mookie Betts is one of those players, I believe, that people are looking at the overall numbers and kind of wondering, you know, how did he actually earn as much as he did? He didn't hit 20 home runs, he barely scraped over 20 steals. But he played almost every day, and you know, George probably knows this from watching him. Mookie Betts just looks like a complete player, and I can kind of see a little bit more upside coming from him given his age and given the improvement that I would expect from him. You know, the one thing about him, I studied this a little bit based on how he's hit to this point. You know, he's kind of at a bit of a disadvantage because of the batted ball profile and the Green Monster. Some of that power you'd expect him to have because the line drives are going to hit the wall and be doubles. But, you know, that's really fine. I'm very comfortable with Betts here at the top of the four-star tier. And in an AL only, I'm kind of fine paying around 30 for him.
Yeah, I think with Betts, what you get is you get banked production. And, yeah, I don't think he is ever going to have the type of season where he's the number one outfielder in all of fantasy, But I mean, I put out my dynasty ranks in the outfield, and I put him third ahead of Stanton, ahead of Pollock, ahead of those guys. And some of that is a factor of his age, just because he's so much younger than those guys. But it's all around production, and it's sustainable all around production. And it's one of those things where, yeah, you look at the stat page and you don't see it right away, but then you look at the valuations and you get it. George, who do you want to talk about?
I was going to talk about Mookie Betts because he's awesome, but I'll take JD Martinez. I think a lot of what we saw last year was we could talk about him overhauling his swing and everything like that, but really last year just reaffirmed what he did the previous year. Obviously, the batting average, he wasn't going to sustain that. I mean, a lot of that was BABIP driven. So he's never going to really be a guy who hits 300. I don't think that's realistic, but he's a 260 hitter and he's hitting 35 home runs. That floor is basically a top 15 to 20 outfielder. There's not a whole lot of guys who do that. And I just think the overall package with him is just so impressive. And at some point, they batted Victor Martinez cleanup a lot last year. I think that's going to change this season. Obviously, adding Justin Upton is huge. That lineup's really good, and he's about as legitimate as it gets for a right-handed power hitter. I think there's still some in the industry and just the general fantasy community who are a little skeptical of him because he did come out of nowhere, essentially, after being released by the Astros and being picked up by the Tigers. So it feels a little fluky, but after two seasons now, I'm not sure how you can question the production anymore, because he's shown time and time again that he's a guy who is going to strike out a lot, but the power to all fields is impressive. I mean, he had so many opposite field home runs last year that there's nothing fluky about his profile, and I think a lot of people still have questions about him, and they should.
So I'm going to talk about the guy who's right after him on this list, and that is Charlie Blackmon. I'm deliberately trying not to talk about people who we drafted on our labor team, so because we talked about those people, I think, in pretty decent detail last week. But Blackmon is safe for now, since Corey Dickerson was traded to the Rays. Sorry, George. And he is he's pretty locked in as a 280 plus hitter with, you know, at least I question a little bit whether the 40 plus steals is repeatable, but 30 plus seems easily repeatable, and with Coors at his back, you know, he should be able to sneak pretty close up to 100 runs again and hit, you know, in the double digits in home runs. So while I think it's probably a good idea not to expect exactly what he put up last year, I think he's pretty safe for about 90% of all those numbers across the board. And given that he was a top 10 hitter again last year, 90% of all those numbers would make him a top 20, 25 hitter this year, which is absolutely realistic for him. And he's really turned into a reliable and really, really strong outfielder. When you know, similar to JD Martinez, it took a while for people to believe in him.
Agree, 100,000%.
Mike, you got anyone else you want to talk about in this group?
Well, it's a pretty thick tier, so we probably should just leave it with one each. So I'll talk a little bit about Yoenis Cespedes, and you know what I'll kind of say about him, and I won't talk about his car, which rolled into camp today, and yeah, I think everybody kind of had the reaction like, "Ah, that's so cool." I just did talk about his car. See what I did there? Cespedes, I see him kind of getting knocked for having that hot month and a half that he had last year, and I think everybody agrees that he's not going to do that over one stretch of time or period again, but he is certainly capable. You mentioned this with Blackmon. he's certainly capable of putting up, I'd say, 85 to 90% of what he did last year. The power in terms of the batted ball distance and in terms of the capability there is legitimate. And he is in a very weak division, and he doesn't have to face his own pitchers, which is a big plus for him. So while a lot of people are down on Cespedes, I really can see him hitting like 25 to 30 home runs with a 280, 285 average. And I think that plays. A lot of people are really pointing at what he's done in the past. I think he'll be fine this year. There's some slippage coming with him. If you're a Mets fan, you probably hope that he opts out after this year and goes somewhere else, because I think the third year of that deal in particular could be a little bit rough. But for fantasy in 2016, I still like him.
Yeah. I think I'm a little bit lower on Cespedes than most people, but you know, I think there's a dichotomy to that. I think people still see Cespedes as a huge upside guy. Cespedes is really a much more consistent fantasy performer than people think. I think his value in 2016 is more about the consistency than about the upside. But it'll be fun to watch him full year in Queens. I'm excited.
Let's go Mets.
Oh yeah.
Well, this was a very positive segment. Can I shed a negative light on one hitter since we went all positive for the most part?
You go ahead, tear down Nelson Cruz.
It's not a tear down. Okay, last year everyone wanted to pile on Cruz and say don't draft him because he's moving from Baltimore to Seattle. Well, when you hit the ball as hard as he does, it doesn't really matter where they kind of put the fences. He was going to hit a bunch of home runs, but there are some real disturbing trends in his overall batted ball profile. He had been right around 43% with his fly ball rate from 2009 to 2014. He went all the way down to 34% last year. Now, that led to an increase in batting average, but his home run to fly ball rate was 30%. Which is not only the highest rate of his career, but it was the highest of any hitter to qualify for a batting title in the last 5 years. He also struck out more than he ever had before. He's 36. I mean, he's always been an outlier, but he's starting to border on absurd here. I mean, this is, I don't think, unless he's able to hit more fly balls this year, which certainly he could do. I mean, guys do change their batted ball profile, but unless he starts doing that, I don't see any way he gets to 40 home runs again. There's just no way. Regression is a real thing.
I agree with that. The one thing I'll say about Cruz in his favor, one of the reasons he has been discounted or was discounted in the past was because of the injury belief, you know, that he'd always get hurt. And now you look at him, and I forget the numbers. It was 150 or 152. But he's hit that number, I believe, three of the last 4 years. I got to go look at it. But when I researched outfield, I saw that. So I agree with you. He shouldn't hit 44 home runs. I'm thinking like 30 is probably a more realistic number. So if you're paying for last year, it's a stretch. But that's one thing I'll say for Cruz, particularly in deeper leagues. He will play. The idea that he's only going to play 110, 120 games is kind of a myth.
Yeah, I think the floor is really high. I think just the ceiling is greatly diminished if his batted ball profile is going to stay the same.
I agree. And that, you know, that was what I expected from him last year, was 30 to 32. So, yeah, that makes sense, George.
Yes, it's a tough batted ball profile to fight through.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, you talk about a guy in Cruz who you think is unlikely to get back to 40 home runs. I'll talk about someone who's also in this tier whose floor I think is 40 home runs, and that's Chris Davis. I know it seems
Chris Davis with a C.
Yes, Chris. I forget. I need to say that. Yes, Chris Davis with a C, the guy who finally showed up. He is, you know, we know the season that he had in 2014, and it was, you know, not ideal, and it was you know, not ideal is a really nice word for it. It sucked. His 2013 was amazing. His 2015 was about the high end of what expectations could have been given his 2014 season, but you know, there were there were reasons for 2014, and we know some of them. We may never know some of them, but Davis is going to strike out. He is going to hit a lot of home runs. Staying in Baltimore is huge for his fantasy value, and I do not foresee a situation where he hits fewer than 40 home runs, barring injury.
Yep.
Yeah. So, all right. So let's move to the next tier. There's no one else interesting to talk about there, right? That we haven't already talked about. No one wants to hear us talk more about Billy Hamilton, do they?
I mean, we could spend 3 hours on this podcast. There's so many outfielders, but you know, I think 1.5 hour would suffice.
Lorenzo Cain's really good. Draft him.
That's it. So is Adam Jones.
We like all these guys. Let's be honest.
That's true.
They're all pretty good.
All right, so for the three-star tier, we're gonna this is 8 players here. So I am gonna have a little fun with the players in here and throw some questions at you guys. So we'll start at the top. More stolen bases in 2016, Gregory Polanco or Jacoby Ellsbury? Mike?
Wow, that's a really tough one to start out with. I'm a big Ellsbury fan, but I'm going to go with Polanco just because even if Ellsbury stays on the field, his profile has shifted away from those steals, from him being a mega stolen base contributor. And if the Yankees want to keep him healthy, I don't think he's going to run as crazily as he did. Whereas it's easy to see Polanco, even if he adds nothing else to his game, stealing 35, 40 bases. I'm going to go with Polanco.
All right. George. More home runs in 2016, Corey Dickerson or Yasiel Puig?
I'll go Corey Dickerson. You forget, the AL East is a pretty good place for left-handed power. I wouldn't be shocked if Corey Dickerson hit more home runs than Puig. Puig's weird. I don't know. I was writing about him, and you kind of just like have no idea how to project him because his profile is odd. He only had 300 plate appearances last year. Pacoda's huge on him, but I don't know if I don't think he can get the 20 home runs. I think maybe set 15 to 18. I think Dickerson can hit 20, no problem.
Do you get concerned about the turf and his plantar fasciitis?
I think they're gonna DH him. Honestly, I think that's the likely course of action right now. From what I'm hearing out of Tampa Bay, the stuff that I've read, it sounds like they want him to DH so he doesn't have to play the field, which honestly might be the best way to preserve his health. Because if that's an issue still, he can't play the field.
Yeah. So, Mike, better batting average in 2016, Adam Eaton or Christian Yelich?
You give me all the tough ones. I'm probably going to go with, I'm going to go with Eaton just because I could see a little more variability with Yelich. That they're both going to hit for a very good average. But I have a better feeling about Eaton hitting 300 or coming close to it. We've kind of seen a little bit of growth with him year over year. You know, the one thing about Eaton is if he does sacrifice average for power again like he did last year, I could see that flipping around. But I just like Eaton a little bit better in that division, not having to face the Mets and Nationals on an imbalanced schedule. So I'll give him the edge. It's close, though.
Okay. George, better bet of former first round picks to return first round value. First round value is completely unrealistic. To return third round value this year, Hanley Ramirez or Matt Kemp?
Matt Kemp has stunk each of the last two seasons in the first half and then looked like a completely different hitter in the second half. I don't know what's going to happen there with him, but I do feel confident with Hanley Ramirez, not defensively. But I think he's going to show up and hit this year. I think he does have a lot to prove. This is David Ortiz's last year. That's sort of always been his mentor and someone he looks up to. I think he wants to show that he can be the next guy. Obviously, none of this is based in any statistical evidence. But anecdotally, this is shaping up to be a pretty big bounce back year for Hanley Ramirez. So I think I'd feel a little better about investing in him. And his ADP is actually I believe, a lot lower than Matt Kemp's right now. So he's a little bit of a bargain right now.
Yeah. So let's do the same thing with the continued three-star tier. And we broke this up into two articles at BP, but this tier is, like all outfield tiers, is seemingly endless. So back to Mike. More home runs this year, Chris Davis with a K or Jock Peterson?
I'm going to go with Peterson, even though Davis certainly has the potential to hit a lot more home runs, but I'm not enamored with the move to the park. You know, Brett, you've talked about the move to the American League and what an adjustment that is the first year. Besides Oakland, he'll be playing an imbalanced schedule with, you know, some games in Seattle and Anaheim, which I don't like either. Peterson, as much as he struggled, you know, for a big chunk of last year, I still see some growth in him. And if nothing else, he should provide that power. He should also be a year older, a year better. Again, it's close. These are all tough choices, but I'm going to go with Peterson.
George, over under on games played for Michael Brantley at 85.
Just trying to do some quick math in my head. Mike got all the tough questions, but I think this might be the toughest one because obviously I'm not a doctor and I'm not in the clubhouse. I have no idea. They're saying what, May as a target date. We're talking maybe mid-May. Mm-hmm. Boy, I'll take the over, but slightly. It's not going to be 100, but I think he could do that.
Sounds good. Mike, more runs batted in, Hunter Pence or David Peralta?
I'm going to go with Pence. I see a bounce back for Pence. Pence is a player I feel is generally undervalued across the board this year. I really like Peralta, but he's one of those players, and I certainly he's overrated in the sense that he's kind of in that where Cole Calhoun was last year, where people are really taking him, kind of assuming that all of his stats are just going to exponentially increase if he plays every day. And that could happen. It happened for Pollock last year, but I see some slippage for Peralta as an everyday player. So he's not my guy here.
Mike, okay. Are you seeing that in like the expert formats, or is it just general leagues? I'm just curious because
I'm kind of seeing it across the board, but he is kind of an expert at this point. It's more the expert tilts. He seems to be a bit of a darling with people, where they're taking the average, they're taking the power. I don't think that's all going to come for him. I think either the average is going to stay the same, or the power at bat for at bat at least will slip a little bit, or I think the average will slip a little bit.
Okay, I was just curious what you were saying. It's interesting. Okay.
George, is there any good reason to draft Cole Calhoun ahead of Shinsu Chu?
There is no compelling reason, and I'll leave it at that.
All right. Mike, more stolen bases in 2016, Billy Burns or Byron Buxton?
It is. Well, the safe choice would be Burns, but I'm going to make the exciting choice and go with Buxton and say that he comes fairly close to Pecota. This is where I could be very wrong because Burns certainly has the capability to steal 40 bases. However, I'm with you, Brett. I'm not as down on Burns as you are, but given Burns' profile as a hitter, I have a hard time seeing him getting on base as much as he did last year. Of course, people said that about D. Gordon last year and were proven completely wrong. So this is one where I could be very wrong, but I'm going to make the sexy choice here and go with Buxton.
Okay. All right. Final question of the three-star lightning round. George, which player is more likely to end up on shallow mixed league waiver wires in June? Michael Conforto or Kevin Pillar?
Wow. I'll say Pillar just because I don't think people are going to give up on Conforto that easily. There was a cool stat on him. He had five opposite field home runs out of his 9 home runs last year. That's pretty impressive for a 22-year-old in his first exposure to the major leagues. I think Conforto is going to be pretty good.
I agree. Is it Pilar? It's Pilar, isn't it?
I think it's Pilar, yeah, but
I keep saying
both, so I'm the wrong person. I'm terrible with pronunciations, and I've mentioned this before on Twitter, but my father is Argentine, and he spoke very well, but he had a very heavy accent, so a lot of words that I learned growing up, I just pronounced them wrong for years and didn't know. And I've always been bad with pronunciations, even to this day. I really have to work at it.
Well, we're not Tino in terms of pronunciations. So that's
little interesting tidbit about me for the listeners.
So the two-star tier is big as well, and interesting in spurts, depressing in other spurts. So let's do an interesting activity here. So we're going to go through the two-star range. Each of us is going to pick a player that we think is going to outperform this two-star group, and each of us is going to pick a player that we think is going to underperform the two-star group. So let's start with George. Who do you think is going to outperform this two-star group?
I think Matt Holliday is way too obvious, so I'll go a little bit off the board. I'll go Delino DeShields. He actually walked a fair amount last year, and really, playing time is going to be there. They traded Leonis Martin. Josh Hamilton is already dealing with a knee issue on the first day of camp. There's a chance he's not playing at all in the outfield. So you're talking about potentially Joey Gallo or Nomar Mazara, who I both really like, but they're talking about bringing back David Murphy. I just think the playing time is a lock for DeShields. He's going to lead off. He's a guy who, if the everyday playing time is there, I think he could get to 30 steals. And he was pretty good last year. I think he could easily, with the way speed's going in terms of evaluation perspective, I think he could easily be a three or four star type of guy. It wouldn't shock me at all.
All right, Mike, what about you?
Well, I'm torn between two guys, and hopefully I don't take your guy, but I'm going to go with Mark Trumbo. And that wasn't the name I thought I'd say until it came out of my lips. But I look at Trumbo, another example of a player who I thought was overvalued for years, really overrated. I saw some ratings that had him as high as, you know, if you're doing tiers, as a four-star tier. Now I look at him in Baltimore, good park. He was in, you know, he doesn't have to make the adjustment back to the American League because he was in the American League last year. And, you know, we talked about Chris Davis with a K, power hitter who the power kind of plays anywhere. Trumbo's sort of the same way. The power plays anywhere. This isn't a batting average play by any means. He could hit 240 or 250 for you. But the potential for 30, maybe even 35 home runs for me plays in this tier. And with that lineup, we kind of talked about it earlier with Jones, it's not hard to see him really amping up the runs batted in and to some degree the runs. So Trumbo could be a pretty, pretty serious bargain here.
All right, so you guys both left me with the guy that I wanted to take in the first place. So not only do I appreciate that, but I get to talk about him now. I'm going to take Denard Span. Span, you know, only played in 61 games last year. But while he was healthy, he hit over 300, had just about as many walks as strikeouts. He actually struck out in less than 10% of his at-bats. He stole 11 bases, hit 5 home runs. He had a, you know, we know we tell everybody not to just prorate stats, but, you know, if Span had stayed healthy for a reasonable period of last year, he would have been in an outfield too in most leagues. And, you know, move to San Francisco, it's not a bad move. He's not someone who is going to rely on a heavy hitter's park. He still has the speed to steal 20, 25 plus bases. He definitely has the skill to hit over 300. He's done that in each of the last two seasons. And being atop that lineup, that I think has some, you know, I agree with Mike. I think Hunter Pence is a good bet to bounce back this year. You know, obviously they have Buster Posey. It's a solid lineup, and Span will have the opportunity to challenge for 100 runs if he stays healthy. There's really just not much for me that separates him from the better average runs and steals guys in the three-star tier. And, you know, it's really only the injury risk that's holding him back. But he played in 300 games combined in 2013 and 2014. So, you know, he's not a terribly injury prone player. He's not the least likely player to get hurt in the world, but he's not someone who you can, you're essentially banking on an injury to knock down their value. So let's roll the other way. Do you guys want to go in reverse order or regular order?
Let's go in reverse.
All right, let's go in reverse order then. The guy I'm going to take is Rusney Castillo. I think that there is a pretty substantial substantially deep floor for Castillo. You know, there should be plenty of playing time for him, but you know, I don't know whether either the hit or the power tools are going to show up enough to give him strong categorical contributions there. And, you know, he's going to have to work to improve the batting average. So if he's just a 250 ish guy with, you know, barely clearing double digits in both home runs and steals, that's not going to cut it compared to some of these names around him. And, you know, Boston's got enough depth that he could lose playing time as well. So reverse order would put us back to Mike.
You could probably, and you did take Castillo, not that I was going to take him, but you could probably take any of the five or six hitters at the bottom of this tier and not go wrong. I am going to take Eddie Rosario. I just don't really have a lot of faith in him, and the ceiling with him isn't that high, in my opinion. I know he had double-digit home runs, double-digit steals. The average was good, but he's one of those players, and this is a cliche with me, and I say this a lot, but if he loses a little, he loses a lot, and he's kind of an AL-only guy or a deep mix. The other thing here that I kind of am watching a little bit, I still don't think Arcia, the Twins Arcia, Oswaldo, is done by any means. And I could see a situation where, you know, Arcia is, what, like 24 years old. I know he has some work to do, but I could see a situation where Rosario loses some or all of his job at some point. I'm fine with that as a one-star pick and making that play. But in this tier, if you're playing with this level of pick or with this kind of bid price, it's just not where I want to be playing. So in an AL only, I'd probably keep Rosario down to single digits. In a draft, in a mixed draft, I'd look at him more at the back end, maybe even as a high reserve pick. It means I probably don't get him, and I'm fine with that.
George?
I'm going to take Steven Souza. Last year, hugely disappointing. You think about his 2015 campaign, you think injuries, but I think the bigger issue was strikeouts. He struck out 144 times in 426 plate appearances. That's awful. And if you look at the Tampa Bay Rays outfield depth chart right now, I mean, they just have so many guys. He's at risk of losing everyday playing time. So those would be the two huge concerns I have. Obviously, he's a guy with the ceiling to hit double-digit home runs and steal upwards of 15-20 bases. But, man, I don't think the playing time is going to be there and the batting average is going to be abysmal. I just think there are too many glaring flaws in his game that any type of production you get is going to really be canceled out by some of those deficiencies. And I think that's the biggest thing that could keep him from providing really any value for fantasy owners.
That seems reasonable to me. I was worried, Mike, when you said five or six guys down at the bottom of the tier that you were going to besmirch Marcell Ozuna, who was one of my candidates for outperformer.
I am worried about Ozuna, but not because of him, but because the organization and the way they jerked him around last year. I'm not convinced the same thing couldn't happen again this year.
Yeah, I'm less concerned about that this year. I think if they did that again this year, I think there would absolutely be a major grievance against Jeffrey Loria. So I don't see him.
It's not like there isn't a market out there to trade him. I mean, look at what the Rays got for. The Rockies got for Corey Dickerson. Like, they could get something for Ozuna if they really wanted to trade him.
Sure. Yeah. They shouldn't, though, because he's good.
No. Yeah.
Oh, I like him, and I got burned with him in the CBS League where I think I paid close to 20 and may have paid 17. But, yeah, I agree. None of this should happen. The Marlins, outside of their stars, though, I'm a little wary because of the way that team's run.
Yeah. So let's now move on to everyone's favorite game. What, do you remember who went first last week?
I think I did, maybe. Yeah, it was 2 weeks ago because of labor, so I completely forget.
That's true. I'm surprised we remember anything.
I'll let you guys go. You can go.
Mike, you can go first.
Such a spectacular. Well, you know what? I'm going to go. I was going to go with the obvious choice, but I'm going to go with Leonis Martin.
Oh,
yeah. Well,
I wanted.
I guess he was the obvious choice.
Yes.
And I see here he's still listed with Texas. That was a mistake. And I'm not chiding JP because these articles, the first thing everybody does is leaps and you know, points out the mistakes that we make. When you're writing 3,000 or 4,000 words or whatever it is, you're going to make one or two. He's with the Mariners now, though, and just one of those players where if he plays, and I believe they're going to play him because of the defense, he has some power. He definitely has some speed. In this tier, you could get 2-star and perhaps even low-end 3-star value out of him. The move out of the park hurts, but he had to get out of Texas. That relationship was strained. And it's very early in spring training, but so far it sounds like he's saying the right things. He's very excited to be in Seattle. He's very excited for the change of scenery. It sounds like he really wants to prove himself. I recognize these are all intangibles that don't count for us or count in real life. But I think it will matter in terms of what he's able to do and putting up some numbers that look pretty good.
Cool. So, George, you're up next. Who's your guy?
Well, I think Aaron Hicks is way too obvious. He should be in the 2-star tier, to be honest with you. But Domingo Santana is intriguing to me, but I'm going to go off the board for this. I'd take Joey Gallo, but I am concerned that I don't think the playing time is going to be there. I think Nomar Mazara is going to be my pick. I'm going to go completely off the board here because I don't think Josh Hamilton's playing at all. I don't see another option they really have. If they're trying to win this year, I mean, you trade for Cole Hamels, you get Yu Darvish coming back. They're trying to win, and I think, honestly, he might be their best option in the outfield there and left. So it wouldn't shock me at all to see him up. And Brett, I know you can probably say a lot more glowing things about him, and we've been really high on Mazara as a site at Baseball Prospectus, but he could hit 20 home runs, and it wouldn't shock me at all.
You know what, in 2016, I think I'd be pretty surprised if he hit 20 home runs. I think the hit tool is more likely to translate right away than the power. Cause he, you know, the power hasn't really showed up in the minors yet. It's there and it's going to be special when it comes out. But, if he got 450 plate appearances this year, I would think a reasonable optimistic expectation would be about 270 and 15 homers.
Yeah.
12 to 15 homers, something like that.
Yeah, I think I meant more of when he's up in a full season, that's the type of guy we're going to see, a consistent 20 home run guy. But yeah, this year I think he'll definitely get a shot early. I don't see why not. Unless Profar can play outfield, but then, you know, forget it.
Oh, but he can.
He could. I don't know. Don't
start Brett on Profar because I think we're so eventually going to wind up with a Profar, a Prof cast, if you will.
Yeah. So I will take the other guy I had my eye on here and as my guy, and I will go with the old man bounce back in Jason Wirth. I think he's not nearly as bad as he showed last year, and I think people are forgetting that he has a pretty good track record of being really, really good. And God willing, he'll be good enough that someone can start sending out links again to that Tumblr page of things of Jason Wirth jumping onto things, which is like it's still one of my favorite websites I've ever seen. I think it's jworthridingthings.com. It's wonderful. George, you should link to it in the post. It's glorious.
We can do that. Yeah. Click on the link.
I mean, he's 1 year removed from hitting 292, 394, 455 with 16 homers and 9 stolen bases and a whole bunch of runs in RBI. And he did pretty much the exact same thing the year before, but with a lot more power. So I think his demise is being over-exaggerated, and he's someone who I think makes a really nice gamble at the end of your outfield.
Oh God, he's 37.
he is he 37 yet? He's not. In he's May. Not gonna be 37 for a couple months.
In May, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's cool, man. It's cool.
Nelson right, Cruz so. Is 36. Just saying.
He is.
Old dudes can mash.
They can. So we made it through outfield. Congrats, guys.
Wow, and we'll do starters, which is fun, and then we'll groan about relief pitchers, and then we'll be really close to the season, and then George will get to listen to us talk about Tout Wars for probably about 6 hours.
I know,
it's gonna be excited.
It's gonna be awesome.
So the 18th round of Tout Wars, Brett. Let's discuss the three $1 players that you purchased. This is just a preview of the future.
What was that?
I said in the 18th round of Tout Wars, let's discuss the three $1 players that you purchased.
Well, I can name one of them right now.
Profar?
Jerks and Profar.
Oh, you know Brett's going to get Profar.
Yeah, you know, we'll talk. Look, we'll talk about this. We'll talk about my. We haven't really gone too much into my personal auction strategy.
That's true.
Ooh.
So we're gonna talk about this in great detail as we approach Tout Wars. But it's not a strategy for the faint of heart. it's fun. I'm gonna have some fun with this.
You know, I should mention, since we're on the subject and before we go, the first edition of my bid values are going to be up on the site as you're listening to this. They're the first pass. They're a little bit rough, but it is something nice to kind of look at and sink your teeth into as you get ready for your auctions this time of year.
Very cool.
Yeah. I am excited to read those.
Yeah, they're a lot of work to put together, but judging by the feedback, I'm really glad to do it.
The people love them, Mike.
The people do.
Yeah. So that is it. We will take a quick break and we will wrap things up. Thank you for listening to episode 79 of Flags Fly Forever. We have been and will always be a Baseball Prospectus fantasy podcast. Go read us at baseballprospectus.com. We are just starting pitcher week and a half in our positional series. Tons of content. It's really, really good. We have a very strong team. I'm very, very proud. And find us on Twitter. Email us flagsflyforeverbaseballprospectus.com. We will see you next week to talk about said starting pitchers, and it'll be a long one and a good one. So we will see you then. Have a good night, everybody.
See you next week.